Coming up next is Real People in the Psychotherapist Chair with Jerry Pives.
Well, a big welcome. It's Tuesday afternoon. It's 1 o'clock. So it is Real People. Only this week, I'm going to mix it up. I like mixing things up and breaking the structure down every so often. I find it quite creative. So I thought this week, let's press repeat and play again. As a teacher, I'm a great believer in revisiting things over and over again. And as a student, I can never go over good stuff too many times. So every so often, I'm going to throw in a program like this, where it's Jerry's best bits. Or, as in this week, it's going to be learn a bit more about Jerry. Now, you may have missed the very first show of Real People, way back when. And on that show, instead of putting my guest through the autobiographical journey through seven, or in that day it was eight tracks of music, now it's down to seven, I decided to introduce myself to the listeners with my own music with meaning. So you're now going to hear my own life through, I cheated, eight tracks of music. And the final track was never actually recorded, but you're going to hear it here for the first time. And after that, I'm going to replay a wonderful, wonderful music with meaning session with a true musician, the children's author and performer and musician, Craig Smith. So I'm going to replay his whole music with meaning section. So you're going to visit through the world of the famous author of The Wonky Donkey. And after The Wonky Donkey Man's top music choices, or rather biographical musical choices, and a few rather fascinating stories, I'm going to round us off with some poems. So to begin with, let us dive in to my very own music with meaning. So to start with, my first track is from all the way back in 1960. And I hope it'll get you giggling and smiling a bit. I was born in Mangakino, in the North Island of New Zealand. Actually, in 1960, it was just a shanty town. It was really just a built-up bunch of shacks for all the workers who were working on the Waikato Dam. And my parents came over, $10 poms, or 10-pound poms, they were called in England, 10-pound poms, they came over, and I was born in that shanty town. I have really quite vivid memories of that time, even though I was only three. And I remember more than anything, the rain. When the rain came down, it had been so dry. I can vividly recall we had these great big water catchers on the by the roofs. You know, there was no water supply. And I can remember the rain coming down and everyone getting really happy. And suddenly all the washing lines were out full of clothing. And as a wee young three-year-old, I can just remember being mesmerized by the bounce up of this heavy, heavy rain, this monsoon type rain, as the mud splatters kind of went up in the air. And it seemed like they went up a long way to me. It was probably not that high. And I remember my father up on the step ladder, or actually the ladder, tapping on that big water container. I'm sure many Kiwis will have stories from their own families of those great big water tanks that houses were built with in those days. And I'm just a little bit proud of my dad because he was involved in that dam for a few years, building that electrical power station right by Mangakino. And, you know, that is still generating power for Kiwis all these many, many years later, 60 years later. So you've got a picture of this little three-year-old in this little shanty town in Mangakino. And he's like wandering around. And this is the song that I was reported to go around singing. And every time I hear it, it hits on the old heartstrings. It takes me right back to those early days, being very young in New Zealand. And it's a piece by Lonnie Donegan called My Old Man's a Dustbin. No, not a dustbin. My Old Man's a Dustman. And apparently I used to sort of parade around the house singing this song at the young age of three. So I hope this one will get you giggling and smiling a little one. Lonnie Donegan, My Old Man's a Dustman. Haven't you just got to love those lyrics? My old man's a dustman. He wears a dustman's hat. He wears cobblimey trousers and lives in a council flat. Now, I'm not sure what my old man would have made of his three-year-old son marching around the house, banging a dustbin lid, singing that song, as he worked his butt off on the Waikato Dam back in 1960. But I do hope he had a bit of a giggle. And let's just think about what was going on in that time. In 1960, well, the Soviets shot down the US pilot, Gary Powers, in his US plane, the U-2 spy plane. The United States escalated the Vietnam War. They sent 3,500 soldiers over there. Governments try to find ways to kill people and sell arms to anyone buying. Does that sound familiar to you? The Aswan Dam got going in Egypt in 1960. And over in America, Dwight Eisenhower signed the Civil Rights Act into law. Don't you think we could do with our New Zealand Bill of Rights being made law over here? I reckon. There was a massive Ban the Bomb. This is 1960. Massive Ban the Bomb rally in London. 100,000 people were there. Does this sound familiar to you? Governments finding ways to ignore the peaceful wishes of its most committed citizens, trying to blow as many human beings to bits as possible. On the literary front, there was a classic American novel, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. And, very importantly, JF Kennedy won the presidential election. See, on this program, you get music, history, and a life story, all rolled up into one. So now we move on to 1964. I'm in Lee-on-Sea in Essex. My parents came back to the UK. Now, you can probably hear a slight disappointment in my voice. I mean, if there was ever evidence of psychosis, that would be parents leaving the beauty of New Zealand to go back to the smog and grey of London and England. With such psycho parents, it's no wonder I decided to become a psychotherapist, is it? And Lee-on-Sea was just on the coast on the north of the Thames, heading out towards Southend. It was really just a place where all the mods and rockers of the day would stop off and have a piss in their motorbike convoys on their way to Southend every summer. I did love those mods with their collarless beetle suits and their winkle picker shoes, riding their tiny Vespa motorbikes with those lion tail tassels blowing off their handlebars. But as for me, at the tender young age of six, I was busy dating a six-year-old Chinese girl called Suki, who lived across the road from us. And we would spend all our time dancing and laughing as our mothers looked on, sipping a polite cup of tea. I can still see Suki's face laughing and giggling as the intensity of life for a young child just burst out of us both. It was as if our bodies simply could not contain the joy we felt. Well, you moved away and broke my heart, Suki. But wherever you are, I hope you are still laughing and dancing. And one of the pieces we danced to? Well, from this era of the mods and rockers, I can vividly remember us spinning and dancing to another iconic piece of music, this one from the Motown era. Let's listen to Petula Clark singing Downtown. Of course, in the same year as Downtown by Petula Clark, 1964, well, this was also the year of John F. Kennedy's assassination, wasn't it? And you know, even at the age of seven, I can remember kicking a football in our Lee-on-Sea driveway whilst my dad was up on a ladder mending the guttering and listening to his transistor radio. I can remember him saying to me, "One of the greatest men in the world has just been shot and killed. This is a terrible thing." And I can remember to this day being struck by the import of his words. Of course, many years later now, it is no mystery to me why he was killed. We know that Kennedy was about to shut down the illegal government within a government called the CIA and to stop the senseless killing, murdering, and maiming that was going on in the Vietnam War. The horror of Kennedy's failure and his death is now writ large across the whole globe where the American CIA-funded war on drugs have been happening all over the globe over the last intervening 50-odd years. Well, to cheer you up a little bit and maybe lift your soul a little for our third track, I invite you to leave all that behind for now and travel with me from Lyonsee right across England to the Welsh borders, to a tiny cathedral city called Hereford. And let us travel forward to the year 1971. I'm now a young and innocent, well, maybe not so innocent, 13-year-old. And I am singing in the cathedral choir. Yep, me, wearing a cassock, surplice and ruff and all. You know, I can't quite describe what it was like for me when I first walked in to Hereford Cathedral. My brother was already in the choir there, and we'd turned up from Lyonsee, and we were camping in a campground just away from the cathedral, and we turned up late for a Sunday service. And we walked in, and the cathedral was full. And what felt like miles away in the distance, I could see these tiny little red blobs where my brother was singing, but the sound that hit me as I walked in to that cathedral, it was as if I was being washed in a vibrational frequency. I wouldn't have said that in those days, but something in me was stirred so deeply. I remember being so excited by the quality, the building, the sound, and it cascaded all around. It was quite mesmerizing. My breath went from me. And so I joined the choir. And whilst others might speak of privilege, this was a utilitarian functional thing for my mother. We had little money. And she had been training us to sing so we could get a choral scholarship and pay for our education in a top school. So we worked hard for this. There was no sense of it being handed on a silver platter or any idea of privilege. This was grueling hard work. We had to get up at 6 a.m. to cycle in the freezing dark and the cold to get into the cathedral for a 45-minute morning practice every day, except for a Wednesday before school and in the school holidays. And then there was another 45-minute choir practice after the school, followed by, you know, when everyone else was out playing and having fun and messing around, we were queuing up for our afternoon choir practice. And that was then followed by a full evensong lasting about an hour. And every Tuesday, that was followed up with a full choir practice with the men that went on till late into the evening. And the only day off was a Wednesday. And on Saturdays, when school finished at midday, because we had morning school then, we would then have Saturday afternoon choir practice, which was another full two-hour job with the men. And that would be followed by yet another evensong. And that wasn't even the big day. The big day was Sunday, with two services in the morning and one in the evening. And then you have to add in concerts and tours that we were trained in, and we could not make a mistake. And if we did not turn up, we were expelled. And that was your education gone. So it was absolutely ferocious. It was disciplined. And, you know, for ages of 9 to 13, I can't think of a better training in discipline, in like a military training, and also in precision and excellence and creative endeavor, and how much work goes on behind the scenes to produce anything that sounds halfway good. So for those 4 to 5 years, I was immersed in some of the most beautiful and spiritually inspired music the world has produced. And I often say that Hereford Cathedral was really my second home. The soaring music matched the soaring Gothic architecture. And it all lifted my spirit on a daily basis and provided me with the stability and security which I really lacked at the time in my family. My family was going through a breakdown. My father was struggling with alcohol and violence, and the family broke apart. It was a devastating time for the family. But throughout all of this, there was this daily structure and discipline of the singing. And I think it's probably this, more than anything else, that kept me sane. And these days, we know that it was probably what kept my nervous system soothed, singing in a choir, focusing on the task at hand. So the piece of music I'm going to play you now was actually the epitome of our choral year. It was sung every Ash Wednesday. This piece carries the highest note in our sacred choral music, the top C. And it's sung by a single chorister as part of a second, or sometimes called an echo choir. On some occasions, this choir is placed in another part of the cathedral altogether with conductor relays. And when I got to sing this, I sang it once. I felt that all of my tedious singing training and my singing practices that I'd done since the age of 8 was worth it. You see, I think something changes in your body when you vibrate at that frequency of the top C and you're supported and surrounded by two whole choirs. It touches me to even talk about it. I think it might be perhaps the closest thing we can get to literally flying to heaven. So here's my third track for you. I hope it uplifts you as it does me. Every time I hear it, I'm transported back to Hereford Cathedral as the choir and the organist lift me up so I can sail across the vaults of the heavens on that top sea. Listen carefully for the second choir. It is simply one of the most breathtaking pieces of music that I know. Gregorio Allegri is the composer. I know it's quite a jump here from Motown and Mods and Rockers to the Sistine Chapel in Rome, where Allegri sang and wrote his music, round about 1630. This particular version is recorded by King's College Choir, Cambridge, and I'm afraid I don't know the name of the soloist. Enjoy. Allegri's Miserere Mei. And that, by the way, is Psalm 51. So in the year that I was singing that amazing piece of music, 1971, there were a few other important things going on in the world. I wonder if anyone listening can remember. Well, here's a few memory joggers for what else was going on in that year. That was the year in which the New York Times, published sections of the Pentagon Papers. Apparently, the Pentagon had been lying to the people about the Vietnam War. Gosh. What a surprise. Who ever heard of such a thing? A government lying to its people? God forbid. In football, there was a tragic disaster in the UK, the Ibrox disaster at an Old Firm football game. I wonder if anyone remembers that. A terrible disaster in Glasgow when the Rangers were playing Celtic, led to lots of deaths. And that was a big thing in those of you who followed football, which I was really into at the time. In that year, there was also the Charles Manson murders of the celebrated actress Sharon Tate and other people as well. And Charles Manson was convicted in that year. That was an infamous case of darkness and depravity. Also, the Walt Disney theme park opened near Orlando in Florida. And, you know, rumors that 200 children have gone missing there cannot be true. So, but, you know, might just be good to hold on tight to your kids and make sure they don't get lost in any of the tunnels down there if you go there. Another piece of dark news, if you like, was that very disturbing film, Clockwork Orange, was released. And when I was at school, some sixth formers smuggled that into our school film society, can you believe? We all sat there and watched it at the innocent age of 13. I think the teachers were so square. They thought it was some kind of harmless film about a clockwork toy. Well, you know, I had nightmares about that film for months, possibly years afterwards. This was also the year in which Jim Morrison of The Doors died, you know, most likely from a heroin overdose. He of the famous track, "This is the End, My Friend." And the dark underbelly of rock music was also emerging at this time. Morrison's death only came 2 years after the death of the Rolling Stones guitarist Brian Jones and 9 months after the deaths of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. So we were beginning to see that all this popular music had a dark side to it as well. And in this year, Apollo 14 landed on the moon, and their astronauts were seen by us bouncing around the place, playing golf. And it's just, you know, it's fantastic, isn't it, that NASA never lies to us about anything and really ensures that we take and took all its work seriously, hey? And a bit of news was going on here in New Zealand. It was the new opera star, Kirite Kanawa, made her global debut at Covent Garden in London. That was a big thing over there. And here in New Zealand, the Manapouri Power Station, our largest hydroelectric generator, was finally completed. So that's what was going on in 1971. While I was innocently singing that music in Hereford Cathedral. So for our fourth track of music, I want to invite you to travel forward in time another 7 years, all the way to 1978. And come with me as we now journey all the way from the Welsh Marches in Hereford to one of the most beautiful cities in the whole of England, possibly of Europe, Oxford. Somehow I managed to get into Magdalen College to study history. Our family still had no money, but this was one of those rare periods in UK history when the government thought that everyone should be eligible for higher education and that it shouldn't just be for the rich or those willing to become slaves for the rest of their lives as they pay off crippling government loans. My local council actually paid for me to go to Oxford. Can you believe such a thing? So there I am, pretty poor, but studying history in one of the most historic cities in Europe. And it was here, much more importantly than all of that, that I met my future wife and the mother of my three amazing children. Francesca was a nurse, and I must admit, I missed quite a few lectures when she went off duty. And I spent an idyllic few years with her and all her amazing nursing friends. Actually, I missed a whole year's worth of lectures, but I was allowed to come back and do an extra year because towards the end of that year, I suffered from glandular fever. Well, one of my most vivid memories of that wonderful time was her sneaking me into a live concert at Pembroke College. She got a free ticket from a doctor who she didn't like very much, but she smuggled me in. And this was a concert by the amazing English singer Judy Zook, pretty much, you know, not really as famous as I think she should have been. And this piece of music takes me right back to that evening where we were dancing, and I spent time just watching her and her friends dancing. I can even recall her wearing a bright yellow boiler suit, and it was just a magical moment that has stuck in my mind. I think that was the night when I just knew that this beautiful half-Italian woman was the one for me from this moment on. Her free spirit and her aliveness simply captured my heart. And so join with me in listening to Welcome to the Cruise by Judy Zook. This is the title track of her album. And, well, what a cruise Francesca and I had of it. 28 years, in fact, and three amazing children to show for it. I wish it had lasted longer, but I still hold you deep in my heart, Francesca. We were blessed with truly magical years. Welcome to the Cruise by Judy Zook. Welcome to the Cruise by Judy Zook. Well, in that year, 1978, while Francesca and I were dancing to that music and I was skipping lectures without a care in the world at the tender age of 20, I wonder if anyone else listening can remember or know what was going on in that world. So here's a couple of memory joggers about that year, 1978. In that year, I remember that Hollywood started to show its really darker paedophilia side when the director, Roman Polanski, skipped bail and he fled the United States of France after pleading guilty to charges of having sex with a 13-year-old girl. And that year also, you know, we had the supertanker Amoco Cadiz, which split in two off Brittany, which created one of the biggest oil spills of history. Also in that year, we had the Camp David Accords between Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat. That's pretty relevant to all that's going on today, isn't it? And there was this incredible story of a Bulgarian dissident, Georgi Markov, being assassinated by the Bulgarian secret police by means of a umbrella pellet gun of some kind, some sort of James Bond murder type thing. That was all in the news at the time. And if you're a boxing fan, then I wonder if you remember, this was a year in which Muhammad Ali actually outpointed Leon Spinks in a rematch to become the first boxer in the world to win the world heavyweight title three times. He did it in New Orleans. That was some comeback. 78 was also the year in which John Paul II was made Pope. And he was the first non-Italian pontiff since, I think, the 16th century. And then another dark event of cults and their power in Jonestown, Guyana. Jim Jones led his people's temple to a mass suicide, which killed 918 people, 270 children, and Leo Ryan, a USA congressman. Pretty weird stuff that year. So that was 1978, and that was my piece from Judy Zook. And now I'm going to ask you to make a big leap forward. We're going to jump about 20 years. Now, quite a few things happened over those 20 years. But 20 years on, in 2000, Francesca and I are living in a tiny West Yorkshire village called Hebden Bridge, deep in the Pennines of England, right up in the north there, not far south of the lakes, in the middle of the country. We're happily married, and Francesca and I have three fab children, Laurie, who's now 12, Hannah, who's 9, and Alfie is 2. You see, back in 1980, I got a job as a history teacher, and about 4 years into that, I was struck down for 18 months, pretty much in bed for 18 months with ME. And the outcome of that was that all my attention turned to healing. And first, I trained and worked as a massage therapist. And then a few years later, I started training as a psychotherapist. And for most of those 20 years, I was working full-time as both a massage therapist and a psychotherapist. Now, in the year 2000, I published my very first book, all about my own zero-strain approach to massage that I had created, which I called No Hands Massage. And this was as a result of my own injuries, and I developed a way to work without injuring the hands. And after this came out, I was inundated with requests to train massage therapists. And basically, this really was the beginning of a whole new journey in which I was training massage therapists all over the UK and abroad, as well as trying to maintain a clinical practice and also spend time with my family. I worked like a Trojan during those years. And over those years, I would train 3,000 massage therapists in my approach. And I built up a beautiful team of trainers all around me. And the only thing that really stopped me dropping dead from overwork was the time I spent with my family. And most importantly, on these courses, these No Hands courses, those moments in the course where everyone was simply getting on with the job of massage. Now, on some of these courses, around about the year 2000, we had as many as 100 massage therapists working in the room, and the energy was absolutely incredible. All those therapists I trained had to learn to move and massage completely differently to how they had been trained. I taught them to stand differently, to move differently, to breathe differently, to use their forearms and their shoulders, and all of this really gently but incredibly deeply. So if you can just picture a room full of massage therapists working in silence, breathing, going slow, well, it was just magical. And the trainers and I were so often reduced to tears. Literally, I'd look around the room at the other trainers and the tears were streaming down their faces, just at the sheer beauty of human beings looking after each other with powerful and deep but silent touch, without any hidden agenda, just the touch, the breath, and the release of trauma out of the nervous system. And because the groups were so big and I wanted to kind of hold the space, I sometimes would play music that would, I think, fit in with that incredible atmosphere. And during this period of time, one piece of music stood out for me and all the therapists. We all use this with our work with clients as well, because it had such a profound healing impact. So this next piece is a really powerfully beautiful piece of healing. So I invite you to join with me and listen to a piece called 100,000 Angels by the amazingly, profoundly spiritual singer and songwriter, Lucinda Drayton, and her almost perfect backing production and support partner of Andy Blissett. And their label is Blissful Music. So this is 100,000 Angels by Blissful Music. And I invite you, providing you're not driving or something, to just breathe and relax. And even if you are, you can enjoy this. And just let their amazing music and lyrics soothe your nervous system. And if it works for you, just picture me in a room full of 100 massage therapists, 40 of them kind of all sighing with peace and relaxation on the tables as their massage therapist works slowly and deeply, moving their bodies and bringing touch like angels of healing. Well, I'm afraid that's what I see every time I hear this remarkable piece of music. So that was 100,000 Angels by Blissful Music. And that year, 2000, that's the year we're in at the moment. That was quite a year. I wonder if you remember some of these events. Pope John Paul II made his first ever visit to Israel. And in the United States, there was a government case against Microsoft. It was ruled to have violated United States antitrust laws by keeping some kind of oppressive thumb on its competitors. Well, great that that was all sorted out, isn't it, eh? So that Microsoft and Bill Gates could never dominate the world or medicine ever again. Sadly, most of us realized that Gates would go on for some reason to become involved in health matters, and he proved himself to be as ineffective with dealing with human viruses as he was with computer viruses. 2000 was the year in which in London, Ken Livingstone became the London mayor, named as Red Ken. And it's also the year in which Putin was inaugurated as president of Russia. NASA launched its 100th space shuttle mission, using the Space Shuttle Discovery. Yeah, it's so great, isn't it, that we can believe everything NASA tells us. You know, after all, it's just obvious that when their rockets take off, they must flatten out and fly almost horizontal to the Earth in a great big curve, and one that directs them always to the Bermuda Triangle in order to leave the Earth's orbit. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? I mean, why would anyone just go straight up, you know? Some people are just idiots, aren't they? So, of course, we had the new millennium. And that opened up with the most important country in the world right here in New Zealand, and Dame Kirite Kanawa and the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra serenading the millennium's kind of first dawn. 12 hours later, you could have seen me standing with my wife and three children watching the millennium fireworks display on the Thames. And despite all the fears and panics, not that fear and panic is something that anyone is interested in making us feel, but in all the fear and panic, absolutely no computer meltdown happened at all. On a darker side, this was also the year in which Kiwis woke up to the appalling child abuse that was being committed, and probably still is, to be honest, by those in positions of responsibility and power. Under Helen Clark's inept economic leadership, Kiwis also fled abroad in record numbers during this year, in thousands. Can't say I blame them with her ensuing record. So that was 2000. And now I'm going to ask you to travel forward in time another 15 years, right the way to 2015. I kind of want to gloss over the middle of that because in 2005, my marriage broke down. And after a short while as a single dad looking after my kids for half the week, I met my second wife, Ella, who was also a massage therapist. After the trauma of my family's breakup, she was like a calm and soothing balm to me and was an incredible support to my children. She kind of arrived like an angel of mercy to my broken heart and my broken life. Frankly, I don't think I'd even be here if it wasn't for her. It's that simple. And yes, you probably imagine not only is she beautiful, but she could dance. Boy, could she dance. And most of our courting was centered around me taking dance classes and struggling and learning how to keep up with her. I never succeeded in that, by the way. Anyway, by 2015, we've been together for 7 or 8 years. And I'm now attending a weekend assessment in Paris to qualify as an international psychotherapy trainer and supervisor. And because it was in Paris, we stayed on to do some Christmas shopping in the amazing December markets in Paris. I had never been to Paris before, and we were both utterly enchanted by it, drinking wine by the firelight and having coffees in all those amazing Parisian cafes. You know, having been successfully accredited, we had such a celebratory great time. And you know what? The piece of music I'm going to suggest now always takes me right back to that time as I finally gained international recognition for my work. So please enjoy with me and Ella this beautifully lighthearted and celebratory short piece of music called Les Champs-Élysées by Joe Dassin. That was the Champs-Élysées by Joe Dassin in the year 2015. I wonder, some of you may actually remember that Paris itself was the scene in that year of two horrific attacks. The first one took place in January at the Charlie Hebdo magazine offices. And then in November, there were attacks right across Paris with 130 people killed. In fact, for this assessment weekend that I talked about, Ella and I arrived just 2 weeks after this massacre, and Paris was still in shock. Although, if you've ever been in a city after something terrible has happened, there's also a great solidarity and spirit among the Parisians, and it was, in fact, a truly special time to be there. In fact, you know, the examination board were worried about terrorist attacks. And originally, the examination location was going to be in Istanbul because it's a global organization. And they actually moved our exam location from Istanbul to Paris to make us all feel a lot safer. Good psychotherapists they may be, but they must not ever take up any jobs as psychics. They managed to locate us right into the center of some of the most horrific terrorist attacks of the year. So now we've reached 2015. I don't think I need to remind you of too much about that year. So I'm just going to invite you for our seventh track here to travel forward with me just another 5 years, all the way to 2020. My children are grown up, and my first grandson is growing up in New Zealand, and I'm still living in the UK. But I felt the call of those grandparent instincts, those vibrations, took me completely by surprise. I had never thought anything about being a grandfather, and suddenly there I was, as if being called to New Zealand. And in the UK, we'd already had a year of lockdowns, and as I was the only grandparent who could get into New Zealand because of my New Zealand passport, because my eldest son had moved to New Zealand and was living here in Wanaka, I was the only grandparent that could get into New Zealand. So my wife and I discussed it, and we decided to take the long journey. And we decided actually to take a much delayed honeymoon from our marriage a few years earlier. So what happened was, well, we took the journey and ended up, and we knew this was going to happen, but not quite the style of it. We ended up in the confines of a military prison in Jet Parks in Auckland. My wife and I were guarded and herded around by security personnel for 3 whole weeks. This was our honeymoon, remember? And I don't suppose there are many people that can boast of spending their honeymoon in separate rooms under military guard, but that was the indignity we had to suffer to reach my grandson, because Ella tested positive for some kind of nasal hair residue in a test that even its Nobel Prize winning inventor, Carrie Mullis, said should never be used to test for a disease of any kind. We were given the option when we got there to the Jet Parks of staying on an extra 10 days after Ella's 10 days of quarantine because she tested for nasal hairs. We'd have to go on after her quarantine of 10 days was over. I would have to stay on another 10 days after that because then I would run the risk of catching nasal hairs. So we were given the option of sleeping in separate rooms. And that meant that we were not allowed closer than 2 meters in the car park with our faces covered up in those nappies on our scheduled walks. Well, I guess this is probably one of the most unique honeymoon experiences ever, with, you know, guards in different rooms. We could lean out of the windows and just sort of wave at each other without wearing masks. Oh dear, talk of insanity and talk of trauma. Actually, when we got out, we went and had a drink in the harbour bar, one of the harbour bars in Auckland, and I literally, for the first time in my life, pretty much broke down in public, in a corner of some bar with all these loud Kiwis hugging and chatting and having a great time. It was just overwhelming to be back to normal humanity, people doing what we were made to do. And this was, of course, an enormous attack on humanity. There's no other way to understand its logic, because there wasn't any other logic. In fact, there wasn't any logic at all, if you think about it. And all of that, you know, well, it was worth it, because after 58 years, you know what? I was back in the land of my birth. Another funny story. Just before we got into the place in the jet parts, I remember queuing in the passport line after we'd landed in Auckland. It was about kind of, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. And a very excited and happy passport controller officer greeted us. I think he'd had nothing to do for the last 12 hours. Well, the airports were practically empty at this time. No one was traveling except us. And he looked at my passport and looked at me and then said one of the most sort of surprising things any passport control officer has ever said to me. He said, "Oh," he said, "does your dad know Craig Davis?" I must have looked a bit shocked and nonplussed at this question. And he just continued, "Only, you know, with you being born in Mangakino in 1957, I reckon your dad must have been working on the power plant there. And my best mate's father, Craig, he was working there too back then." I shook my head dumbly and apologized for not knowing a Craig Davis after 58 years away and having left at the age of 4. He said, "Oh, don't worry. Welcome back," he said. And he added that practically everyone knew everyone in New Zealand. Walking through as if I was in a dream, I then allowed myself to be herded into a cattle cart for international travels, all of us who were perfectly healthy. Some arrival, eh? So then after we got out, Ella and I hired a camper van and we drove all the way from Auckland to tiny Wanaka, to arrive just in time for my grandson's 3rd birthday, despite being held back an extra 12 days or so at Jet Parks. So, and by the way, if I ever meet the chef who cooked at Jet Parks, I will need restraining, I can assure you that. I've never known anyone murder food like the chef there at Jet Parks. And I actually had food poisoning, which meant that I then got the nasal swab stuck up my nose. I kept trying to say, "No, it's my stomach, not my nose, that is the problem. I've been poisoned by your bloody chef." And then they wanted to check for this, you know, the strain of nasal hair that was in my nasal passages. Well, eventually we got out and we got the van and we drove down. And we actually arrived a day early to pick up my grandson from his nursery, but he'd been told that we would arrive on his birthday. So he looked up from his playing at his nursery and with a great big excited grin on his face, he said, "Am I 3 now?" You can't just create the logic of a 3-year-old. You know, your grandparents are coming on your 3rd birthday. So when we arrive, of course, he says, "Am I 3? Kids are just amazing, aren't they? Just amazing. But you know what? Driving through New Zealand on that trip, all the way from Auckland, visiting on the way the tiny community hospital that I was born in Mangakino, which is amazingly is still a healthcare center. But smelling the smells, hearing the sounds, seeing the sea, the mountain, the rivers and the lakes, well, I can't really put that into words. I just knew somewhere deep in my body that I had come back to the place where my life started. And you know what? Every time we turned a corner and I was confronted with yet more majesty and beauty, I would just find the tears streaming down my face. I was home. The exile had returned. And you know what? The music we played pretty much the whole way down was this awesome music by the brilliant Kiwi musician Opetaia Foya. Well, I don't think I've got his name right. Foa'ai, I think his surname is. But you'll know him because of his unique brand of Pacifica music became the music for Moana, the film, and his band was Te Whaka. And you know, whenever I hear this piece of music, I am brought back to that beautiful drive through this beautiful land, New Zealand, the land of my birth. So please enjoy with me Whakaitu from the album Olatia by the band Te Whaka. So you've been listening to the music of Te Whaka, and the track was Whakaitu from the album Olatia. So that was our seventh track, and that was 2020. And finally, here I am in New Zealand, and I'm able to watch my beautiful grandson grow up, and even more amazingly, find that my wife, Ella, has fallen instantly in love with New Zealand and declares that she does not want to return to the UK. Which is quite a good thing, actually, because within a few months of our arrival, with the insanity of the pandemic going into full swing here in New Zealand, we were actually no longer allowed to fly anywhere, eat in any restaurants, go to the swimming pool, attend churches, because the governments were suddenly telling us what to do with our bodies. I'm sorry, but Ella and I take it as a sacred trust what we do with our bodies. And frankly, no one was going to tell us to bypass our God-given and natural defense systems and inject some dodgy experimental gene therapy directly into our bloodstream. You got to be joking. And even my professional psychotherapy association here in New Zealand forbade me to see clients because I would not comply with this new and insane doctor government. I would not get that injection, no matter what it costs. So instead of seeing clients, I decided it must be time to sit down and write about everything I had learned about touch, psychology, and trauma over the last 20 years of full-time clinical practice, as well as training thousands of therapists in my approach. I had a feeling that we might need some help in dealing with trauma. So there I was during the draconian and evil lockdowns and isolating of people and families, sowing division in every which way within families and groups and communities. There I was writing about the healing power of touch and just how important it was for humans to connect with each other and, above all, connect with safe, soothing touch. Now, this actually was not an easy thing to do. It was a bit like writing about the Mediterranean sun whilst being trapped in Antarctica. But eventually, the book got finished, and now I'm busy helping people understand how they can remove trauma from their nervous system using touch. And I truly believe that that is what Ella and I are here to do. That is, whenever we're not busy helping our grandson build rockets and space stations in our living room. But I'm back here, and I know that here is where I will remain to the end of my days. So let's end this musical diary of my life by landing firmly in 2023 with an amazing piece of music, one that speaks to the need that all of us have to find healing for our nervous system and to remove trauma. You know, during this journey, I think I've mentioned a couple of times vibration and frequency. And it turns out that some of the most healing vibrations in the planet can be found in the sound of the human voice and in some of our most ancient music. There is a large amount of research emerging now about not only the healing power of the human voice, but in particular, the healing power of the medieval Christian plainsong chants. So I'm going to share with you a piece of music that I'm listening to almost daily. And I use it to retune myself and get my vibrations as high as possible. It's a 13th century chant, and it was made by the Cathars. And because they were persecuted for their religious beliefs, the words they use in the actual chant itself are pretty obscure. It's in the ancient language of Occitan from southern France, and the imagery they use is pretty obscure. And I'm no scholar on all of that, but if you actually just listen to the music, and particularly you hear this repeated chorus of the five vowels in all language, the R, A, E, O, U, you too may find that, like me, your heart is lifted up in the vibration, and you can maybe hear in this song some of the deepest yearning of the human heart, I believe. A yearning to reach up to the source of our life, to return to our maker. In other words, to come home. The words that I hear in this chant are actually very simple. They are the sounds of every human heart that yearns for peace, for healing, and for wholeness. And, you know, if we're going to talk about this in any way, well, their use of the five vowel sounds of all languages harks right back to the only theory of our origins, our genesis, that provide a full and complete answer. Unlike the scientists who kneel down and pray to their very recently invented materialistic dogma of something coming out of nothing in a bang, rather like a firecracker on a wet day. But by the way, something coming out of nothing is a breach of every one of their own scientific rules. And these people, they suggest we were all made accidentally over millions of years, and that all we are is some result of an insignificant and random collision of atoms that accidentally formed us. Something that one writer called the scrapyard theory of creation, in that he suggested that there's a greater probability that all the parts in a scrapyard would magically form themselves together into a Boeing 747 than the Big Bang theory ever happening. Well, while that very new theory in the history of humanity is taken as some kind of gospel truth, when in fact it is clearly just a made-up fairy tale, the most ancient true gospels of them all, the Bible, simply states and has stated for thousands of years that actually we were created for a reason, and God created everything. It comes from God. That's the beginning. And he created everything for one reason. For us. Now that makes us pretty special, especially as we have also the statement that we're made in his image. So anyone that can create a planet makes us in his image. That's a pretty amazing picture of what we as humans are. Ah, you can choose your random theory for belief. I'm cool with that. You know, you're descended from a shrew after some Holocaustal meteorite. It's fine, you know, some random thing, accidental. Meaningless, sitting on some remote spiral, or you can put us at the center of creation and say, we're here for a reason, guys. We're here for a reason. Well, you know what it's obvious what I think. And the point I'm making here is that this isn't some kind of, you know, Bible bashing conversion discussion. It's really about how we think creation happened. And the Bible said that God did it with, and here's the point, he did it with the sound of his voice. In Genesis, it said, God spoke the words, let there be light. And guess what? Light appeared. And as John put it in those immortal words right at the beginning of his gospel, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Well, now, if any of that is true, and it is the biggest belief by most humans across the planet, if any of that is true, then in this chant, where we have the R, A, E, O, U sound, well, this chant is giving us the very vibrations and the sounds of all of our beginnings. Well, if you need the theory, that's a bit of theory for you, but just experience it. Try humming along to it. I think you will be amazed at its gentle healing power, vibration, and frequency. So, This whole story of my own historical coming home back to New Zealand ends with a piece of healing music, how we can all heal from the trauma of the last few years, not just by touch, but by sitting still and joining in with these beautiful and ancient sounds of our origins. Well, this for me is the real sound of our spiritual coming home. So here is Patrick Lenk singing some of the most ancient healing music I believe exists on our planet in his recording, The Chant of the Gnostics. Let your spirit soar. Let your soul find peace as your vibration rises. And do not be surprised if you breathe and sit with this music, you feel some emotion. That's normal as we cleanse and release and heal and raise our vibration.
You're listening to Real People with Jerry Pives right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
So what have I got lined up for you now? Well, following that little journey down memory lane with me, I'm going to replay the wonderful Music with Meaning section of my session with the amazing Craig Smith, the author of The Wonky Donkey. So hold on to your hollyhocks, because we are now going to dive in to the musical world of the author Craig Smith. Here it is. So welcome to this next segment of my show. And this is where I speak with Craig Smith about music that has meaning to his life. And we ponder together what was going on for him and what events were taking place during the various times and periods that we travel. And just a reminder to those of you who'll be listening to this on the replay edition of Real People on RCR, yeah, for copyright reasons, we're not able to include all the music in the on-demand replays. So instead, you'll be hearing a compilation of the conversation that Craig Smith and I had on a journey through the music. Remember, you can get the show notes with more information about the music played this week and find these on the app under the relevant show, or visit realitycheck.radio/Jerry. That's realitycheck.radio/GERRY. So on with the show. So Craig, tell us all about your first track of music, please.
Right. So as a child, I was exposed quite a bit through my stepdad to the Goons in general, and through the Goons, Spike Milligan, and showing my age a little bit here. But Spike Milligan and you know, the whole crew, Harry Secombe, and they were just so brilliant. And
Peter Sellers, wasn't it?
Sellers, yeah. Peter Cook, they were so brilliant and made me laugh a lot. And the natural progression, Spike Milligan's children's stories and songs. And of course, you may or may not remember The Bad Jelly the Witch, but that's around 20 minutes long. So, I chose this one, which is called The Ning Nang Nong, and it's a song by Spike Milligan.
Who makes up a song called The Ning Nang Nong Song?
Yeah, well, you'll see what it's like. When you get a chance to listen to it, you'll hear it. I'm surprised you haven't heard of Bad Jelly the Witch.
Do you know, I might have done, but forgotten it. My age is not so different from yours, Craig. And I was brought up on the Goon Show and listening to the whole Goon Show. My dad was a great fan of it. So I can really relate to it. I'm sure quite a few listeners of the older generations will be able to enjoy this one. And actually, a lot of young people are really enjoying the reruns of the Goons and stuff like that. They are just... There's something else, aren't they? They were a real precursor to the almost surreal humor of the Monty Python gang later on. Yeah. So they,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So tell us a little, just before we play it, tell us a little bit, set the scene a little bit for when this was in your life, what this brings you back to and what you remember from that time.
What I loved about this music and Spike Milligan's stories and the Goons, the whole works, was it was just about being silly and just about having a laugh. There was no political bent. There was no, there was no teaching, There wasn't like, this is the moral of the story. It was just silliness for silliness' sake. And that's, I try to do, although I do bring in little moral things into my stories, I try and lean on the side of silliness and ridiculousness just for a laugh, just to have a good time. And I think in this day and age especially, it's a bit more of a reprieve, you know, like especially the younger ones these days are getting dragged in kicking and screaming sometimes to sort of ideological and political sort of ideals, and they shouldn't really be being exposed to at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you know. And that's what I loved about this stuff, was that it didn't have any of that. It was just about a laugh and just about a giggle.
Well, so, absolutely. And I think ordinary Kiwis just have had enough, haven't they? There's a sort of a reaction going on now where they're just saying, for heaven's sake, you know, just educate our children and let the parents do their job. You know, the parents are the main people to teach most of the morals and the stuff around sexuality, and all of that should be left to the parents, in my opinion. But so many Kiwis are getting fed up with this left-wing political campaigning that subjecting these young kids. There's a big movement on that right now, isn't there? So, listen, isn't silliness funny? I mean, I think about that in terms of, it's almost like a universal language that children speak that we as grown-ups forget to speak. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten to speak. I think that's one of the reasons why my children say so well, is because I don't think I've ever really let go of that portion of me as a child. And it's coming through. My daughter's now 8, and she makes me laugh all the time, you know? She just makes me laugh all the time, and at the most inappropriate times, she will do something where I'm trying to be serious, or I'm trying, you know, and then she reminds me, let's have some fun here. So, I totally agree with you that most people, it seems to be a bit of a theme that I've sort of noticed, is that a lot of people hang on to the worst part of their childhood, and they let go of the best part of their childhood, and it should be totally the other way around. Let go, or at least acknowledge some of the worst parts of your childhood, and think about the best parts of your childhood, you know, just being silly and just being able to let go and incorporate more of that into your life. And I think you'll get a bit of reprieve. That's the key there, isn't it?
Oh, it's why I love talking to you, Craig. You speak such good sense about really good stuff. You know, like as a therapist, people come to me in a lot of pain, but I'm also trying to help them focus on what they've forgotten. And you're right, people do forget the good stuff. And I remember from in your session that you were talking about you reaching out and talking to all the men that had been a great influence on you and thanking them. And that's an act of the good stuff, isn't it? And it's very easy to get stuck in the bad stuff. I get it. I understand why we do it. Yeah. But yeah. So let's have a listen to the Ning Nang Nong song by Spike Milligan. I could hardly even say it with a straight face. Well, you've just been listening to the Ning Nang Nong song by Spike Milligan. Craig, what a crack up. Tell us what you love about that song so much.
Well, just as I said on the introduction, just the silliness of it all. You know, as kids, I remember, and it's a good memory, I remember going over to my friend's house and he had a cassette and we played that. It was as well as Bad Jelly the Witch, and as well, another one I love is... it's about a baboon that tries to fly to the moon, and he just starts flapping his arms and running. He just can't quite get off the ground, but it takes ages. But it's that type of stuff that just made me laugh. And I remember being on the bus with my friend and reciting the Ning Nang Nong and just being silly and ridiculous. And it's just a good giggle. I love his accents too. You know, he grew up in India, so he does a good Indian accent. And then, of course, he fought in the war, so he does a good German accent as well.
You got me giggling just listening to you and listening to this song. So, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And, of course, continuing that conversation around just having fun or messing around or being so-called silly, actually, there's a lot of scientific, serious research about the value of laughing and shaking the body in terms of releasing tension, you know?
Absolutely.
You even now get these very serious trainers and psychological people in very serious ways, inviting everyone to seriously laugh.
<It's> yes. Like,
the best technique I used in my courses was to get a whole room full of people lying on the floor, and each person had to have their head on someone else's belly. So your head was on someone else's belly, and there you had someone else's head. And well, people had barely laid down before everyone was shaking. And the more your tummy shook, the more you laughed, and the more you laughed, the more the next person laughed. And it was just hilarious. If you ever want to get a group of people laughing, that is the quickest technique I know.
A belly laughing daisy chain.
Right. So that was the Ning Nang Nong song. What have you got next for us, Craig? What's your second piece?
Well, this is one of my own. I thought I'd sneak a couple of my own in. This one's called The Stinky Wonky Donkey. And this is the new book that's just been released about a month ago. It's in the top 10 selling, and it's in all good bookstores around the country. But of course, as you know, I write all my stories in songs. So this one's called Stinky Wonky Donkey, and it's basically about Wonky Donkey having a laugh with his daughter. And, yeah, I mean, I try to bring silliness and laughter into my stories as well. And this is a good example of it, I guess.
Well, I have not heard this yet, so I am so excited to hear this. And this is the Stinky Wonky Donkey from the Wonky Donkey Man singing his new song and from his new story. Let's have a listen.
I tell you what, I'm really excited about this because my daughter joins me on this. She came into studio with me and joined me. And so she plays the Dinky Donkey part and I play the Wonky Donkey part. So I was very proud about this, how this turned out.
Oh, that is just beautiful. And do you know, I'm so pleased the Wonky Donkey's back.
Right.
It's great to have him back. So let's have a listen to the Stinky Wonky Donkey. Well, that was the Stinky Wonky Donkey. Craig, tell us more about this piece.
As you can hear, my daughter does a great job joining with me. She had a tiny cold when she came into the studio, but of course that actually just added to this. But of course, the great giggle at the end there is Pulma Hoof, and she's finally let in on the joke, and Wonky Donkey does the farts. And, you know, the funny thing was we had a studio and we're downloading farts from the internet and then trying to place them, you know, timing wise the best way and the most variable amounts of farts and, you know, the different types of farts that you could do. And, you know, I looked at the producer and I said, can you believe this is my job, downloading farts from the internet and then adding them onto a song and trying, oh, this that fart's a little too early, the timing's not quite right, let's just do it half a second later, or vice versa, you know. It was just ridiculous. We had a great day in the studio. And, of course, Maya just loved it as well.
You should add the title Professor of Fartology to your long list of achievements, I think, on this one. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Lovely. Oh, this is great fun. Tell me what your third track is, Craig. What are you going to bring?
I'll start with a bit of a laugh and show you, like, my childhood sort of songs and the songs that I produce now for children. But this one is a song, Corporation XYZ. And this is where it's funny. My adult music is a little bit more serious and a little bit more political, I guess. Whereas my kids' music's the opposite end of this. So this one is Corporation XYZ, and it's about a song I wrote about all those corporations out there. You know, a few spring to mind: Halliburton, you know, BlackRock, Vanguard, all those big corporations. They only care about the fiduciary responsibility of getting their shareholders as much money as they possibly can. And how they do that really doesn't matter. It's more about just money. You know, it's not, they would be successful either way. They'd be successful, for example, you know, instead of making 500 million, they'd only make 400 million, but they'd have to dispose of the mercury and the uranium in a responsible manner. But if they don't, then they make an extra 50 million, you know, so they just throw it into rivers, or they do things ethically or morally. So that's what this song's about, Corporation XYZ. And it's kind of related, in my opinion, at least, it's kind of related to how I went to Wellington and was involved in the protest there on Parliament Lawn, because, you know, I have a feeling that Big Pharma are also sort of like these corporation XYZs who really try and make as much money as they possibly can. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that when they leave their morals to make more, even more money, that's an issue for me. So that's why I ended up writing the song Corporation XYZ.
Yeah, it goes beyond profit and it turns into greed, really, doesn't it? I mean, just naked greed, really, is what you're talking about here. They could make plenty of money for them and their shareholders, and they could do a more responsible job, couldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the scariness of AI, artificial intelligence. And this is what I came up with myself. But on studying different corporations and the way that the corporations are set up, you know, they are a separate entity. They are a non-thinking entity that really is set up in a way that's only designed to try and make as much profit as possible. And in that way, they're kind of psychopathic. You know, there was a study done on companies, you know, imagining that they were people. And do they feel? No. Do they, you know, do they have morals? No. Do they have ethics? No. And yeah, basically our business model is a psychopath. And the way it's up is kind of, it's almost out of, deliberately, it's out of the responsibility of individuals. So they function sort of like artificial intelligence. So that's my theory, is that we're already in AI, and it's the corporate businesses that are the artificial intelligence. The only problem is that it's analog, you know, this old system of these corporations set up and running, and now we're about to go digital with them. So that's the scary thing. But I have a feeling that, in my opinion, that for the last, you know, since corporations were invented in the late 1800s, that we've sort of been under a slow artificial intelligence running our world in the first place, which is the reason why, you know, we are often thrust into that morally and ethically wrong, in my opinion. So, yeah, I saw that years ago, and I wrote the song Corporation XYZ.
So this was written a few years ago?
Yes.
Brilliant. Well, let's have a listen. Thank you for that really interesting stuff there. I have an enormous instinctive and intuitive aversion to AI. And I think even when it can help us a little bit, I think we're kind of getting in bed with something really dangerous. But that's an instinctive, intuitive response. I haven't done research on that, but I've learned to trust my intuition more than anything these days. I don't trust what I hear on the media. I don't trust what I hear anywhere, actually. I'm learning to trust my intuition, and I don't like it. So let's hear Corporation XYZ by Craig Smith. So you've just been listening to Corporation XYZ by Craig Smith. Thanks for that, Craig. Anything more you want to say about that piece?
Oh, no, I think it's pretty direct. That's pretty clear and concise what I think about those corporations.
No ambiguity in that message, eh?
No ambiguity at all.
Nice one. So tell us what you've got lined up for our fourth track, Craig.
Well, this was something I loved listening to. And when I was in my youth around the 1980s, this is from a band called Midnight Oil, and it's called US Forces. And, you know, the opening title is Give the Nod. It's a setback for your country. And, you know, when we say US forces, I mean, very often, more often than not, you know, New Zealand forces, Australian forces, allied with the US forces. We did that in Vietnam. We've done it in several, you know, we did it in Iraq. You know, so this whole idea of the big and it's very similar. So it's a thread going back to Corporation XYZ, the military industrial complex, you know, pushes on to create war, to basically launder public money into private hands, basically. And sometimes it's done for correct purposes, you know. World War II was a good example of that. But then other times it's very clear there's no real reason to be invading these countries. Iraq was pretty clear, you know. Vietnam, pretty clear. We should be here. And you know, I understand sometimes they think that they're doing the right thing if that's the facade that they want to point out, you know, but most of the time it's pretty clear. And you know, in hindsight, it's even more clear that these types of things, but we just can't seem to learn. And, you know, Midnight Oil had another song called Short Memory. It just seems like we have a short memory of the troubles and issues that we're causing around the world by doing these types of things. So this is Midnight Oil and US Forces.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. I can't quite get my head around anyone who wants to create a war. I trust the reasons for wars a lot better if they didn't always seem to locate around resources like oil or to do with an independent country not buying into the banking system of the City of London or Washington, D.C. and New York. And, you know, that would be a little bit easier to swallow if there weren't all these other reasons why you think, well, hold on a sec, you know, this is a big oil producing country, or this is, you know, they're not following the banking system that makes all these crazy people so much ridiculous money. I mean, listen, if we stop wars, we'd have so much money for so much good things on the planet, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Nice one. Let's have a listen.
You're listening to Real People with Jerry Pives right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You've just been listening to US Forces by Midnight Oil. Tell us what you like about this, Craig.
I was just going to say that I think Midnight Oil is one of the most underrated bands, not just in Australia, but worldwide. And amazingly, they could sing songs like US Forces, very political song, but very, very toe-tappy, get up and dance. Every single song had a message, but every single song had their own hooks, and they're really fantastic musicians. So you were getting up and dancing to these political songs, and I just love the fact that you could be dancing and singing along. A lot of people didn't even know what they were singing about, but they were singing about really big political issues, you know. And often a lot of people did know what they were singing about, which made it all more poignant.
Yeah, well, you went to Wellington, right? And in Wellington, you know, there were so many musicians singing great political songs and everyone kind of together joining in. It was a great atmosphere, eh?
Yeah.
Did you have a fifth track for us, Craig?
One of my favorite artists of all time, a guy called Bob Marley. I'm sure you've heard of him. And this one is Get Up, Stand Up, which, as I said, very poignant. You know, again, brilliant, brilliant musician, very hooky. You're singing along and political as well. I love these types of songs.
Does it have any particular memory association with you, Craig? Does it take you back to any particular time in your life?
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, this is like the late 80s, 90s for me. Bob Marley was huge. And of course, you know, I can't remember if it's Bob Marley's birthday or the day he died, but that's the 6th of February, which is also New Zealand, you know, New Zealand Day. So New Zealand Day, and came to New Zealand, I remember, and played on New Zealand Day in New Zealand. And it was huge. I think it was Mount Smart Stadium. I didn't get to go, but there was lots of talk about people traveling up to see Bob Marley in Auckland. You know, and people hitchhiking all the way up and finding a way in and trying to get up there without even having tickets, but then, you know, gate crashing the place. He was a force, and it's a shame he left us too early. But I think if he was alive today, I think he would have more influence, you know, in a positive way. But anyway, Bob Marley, one of the best musicians of all time, Get Up, Stand Up.
So you've just been listening to Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley, and I'm talking to Craig Smith. And Craig, tell us a little bit more about that piece for you and what it reminds you of in particular.
Well, it's very direct. Get up and stand up and stand up for your rights. And I just love his ability to be able to sing along, dance along. That's that powerful. You know, I just think it's incredible. He's a very clever musician.
He had such a reach in the late 80s, and people still play him today, don't they?
Yeah, love to.
He stood the test of time. Beautiful, beautiful music. Do you know, I know this is about your memories, but I can remember running a local church youth club in England in a tiny city called Colchester. And I took them all out, these kids didn't have much money, so the parish found money. We went out on an old Thames barge for a week sailing with all these kids. And as we sailed out of Ipswich Harbour, I think this was about 1983 or something. I remember it was a beautiful sunny day. The kids were all just on the deck. They were so excited. And they were actually very chilled, the wind, the sun, the water. And the captain, who was a real wonderful aging hippie, he just slammed on this song by Bob Marley. And as soon as I heard it, it was like, oh, it took me. I was right back there. You know, like music does that. It took us right back. And just being so happy to be with these kids, and they're so full of life, and they were just and giving them a flavor of nature and wind and sea. Oh, you can't make it up, really.
Yeah, that's right.
So now we're on to track number 6, Craig, and what delights have you got in store for us here?
Well, when I get away from it all, I've got a log cabin down south in deepest, darkest Southland. And when I get there, I unload the food because I'm going to be there for 4 days. And I immediately go to, I have a record player down there, but depending on the situation, I'll either put it on streaming, or now that we've got some internet services down there, playing Billie Holiday straight away. And I have that on my Yui Boom and just have that playing. And it sort of softens the mood, and I think she's brilliant. She's absolutely stunning. It sort of takes me back, you know, this is obviously music recorded even before I was born in the 40s and 50s. But, you know, she was an amazing singer and songwriter. And again, has stood the test of time. And, you know, when the breeze for me and being relaxed is just going down and playing Billie Holiday, starting the fire at the log cabin, I get into a space where I can start to write new children's songs and also new song mature as well. So this is Billie Holiday, but this song in particular is pretty incredible song. It's called Strange Fruit, and it was I'm not sure if you've heard of the song before, but it was a poem that she had read. And the strange fruit is a disgusting thing to say and to bear witness to, but the people that she possibly even knew were hanging from the poplar trees, and the racism that went on, and, you know, it beggars belief how people can treat each other. But this song, although it's very deep, again, is one of those songs that you can have on and just sort of drift. You know, we talked about how Midnight Oil and Bob Marley could have a sort of almost an oxymoronic, very serious subject, and tapping and get up and dance. This one's the other end of the scale. It's very serious, incredibly serious subject, but actually something you could just have in the background and listen to quite easily and be singing along to, not even knowing that you're singing what the subject matter is, you know. So I thought I'd add this one in here, Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit.
Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday.
Yeah, pretty incredible musician, as I said. Just very quirky, lots of minor keys. She's just a brilliant musician and taking it to areas and harmonies that you didn't even know were there. So it's pretty incredible. And this is, again, for me, listened to the song quite a few times before I realized what she was actually singing about. And then it was like, holy moly, this is pretty, like, she's singing about that. Wow. And it still goes on to this day in some countries, but we're talking about in the USA that they were, you know, the blackbirding in Australia, and I'm sure it happened here in New Zealand as well. And it's just the thing that gets me is these were ordinary people, just everyday builders, carpenters, and they turned into monsters quite quickly and easily. That's the warning of this song for me.
Yeah, isn't it strange, Craig, that you can be reflecting like that and at the same time you're announcing it also as a piece of music that you can relaxed to, and it just kind of, when you go to your cabin and it gets you kind of in the groove, it's an amazing power of music, isn't it? That juxtaposition between something profoundly serious and almost haunting about humanity. And on the other side, it's also just a real chill tune. You know, it's a real chill piece of music.
Absolutely.
So we're going to move on to our last track now, Craig. So what's your seventh and final track for us, and tell us why you've chosen it?
Well, I think we went on a little bit of journey with that, with the kids stuff. And then we started to get into stuff around, you know, a bit more serious political songs. And I just thought it was a good way to choose this song, which is ending on a positive note, on a lovely note. When I was growing up, Neil Young was a huge influence on my musical style. And I just think, again, Neil Young's a brilliant musician. And, of course, he joined with, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and they started Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And this song, Teach Your Children, I just think is a brilliant affirmation to finish this on. You know, we've gone through that little musical journey there. And it's connected back to the start, children's music, and just about how parents, they really do need to, you know, just set the example for their children in a positive way, and to be brought up in a safe environment. I think that's super important as well. If we can do that, then I think the future's looking good. I really do. I think we're in a situation now where things have sort of built up against a bit of a dam wall. And I think that dam's about to burst, you know, in a flurry of goodness, that we can sort of re-steer our ship onto a bit more of a positive point of view. As long as we're good with our kids, I think the future's in good hands.
Well, is there anything more important than how we bring up our kids and what we provide them with? I know that in sort of psychological circles, we know that if kids grow up, and even in the first 2 years of life, you know, that if they don't have what we call a secure attachment, if they don't have someone who makes them feel safe, who's there when they need them, if they don't have that secure relationship at the beginning, even, you know, as crazy as it sounds, you know, by the age of two, if they don't have that, then they can spend the whole of their life feeling anxious, having what we call insecure attachment. They can become narcissistic. They struggle with even the most basic safeties of human interaction. And the future is our children. The future of our whole species depends on our children, doesn't it? So, you know, I've always had so much respect for you and how much you bring to our awareness of just hanging out with our kids, singing a song, reading a story. I can't think of a more important message, really.
Brilliant. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and, you know, the memories I have as a child, my dad left when I was very young, but my mum, I knew my mum loved me, and she would step in front of a bus if asked, you know, I knew that. And I think that's how we need to, like you say, that grounding that we have with our children, that we're there for them and that they know it. And if they, for whatever reason, if they went missing, we would not stop looking for them, you know. And, you know, and that's where the song comes into. I know it's fairly obvious, teach your children well, but I just love this little positive little affirmation to end our little musical journey on.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for sharing this journey. And we're going to go out to the sound of Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Teach Your Children. Thanks very much, Craig Smith.
Take care, Jerry. Thanks.
That was Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young with Teach Your Children. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this show. You've been listening to Real People with me, Jerry Pives, and the famous singwriter and children's author, Craig Smith, as he's been sitting in the psychotherapist chair, sharing his life story and walking us through the music that has meaning for him and his life. And if you haven't already got it, do go and get his latest best-selling children's book, adults included, by the way, which heralds the return of the hilarious Wonky Donkey. And you can get it in all the major bookstores. That wonderful donkey ain't never going to fit in And if you ever feel that you don't really jive with the way that our society is going, anyone here feel that? Well, I can think of no better story to listen to than the story of that wonderful wonky donkey. And if you want to get yourself a degree in donkey fart, then go listen to his side-splitting song that goes with the book, The Stinky Wonky Donkey Song. I defy anyone to keep a straight face while listening to that absolutely hilarious song. And if you want to follow Craig's exciting career, find out all about his work, just go to www.craigsmith.co.nz. And if you've enjoyed this show, send me a message. I would love to hear from you. Share your reflections. I'd love to hear your comments, and I will answer any questions you ask. Just text 2057 or email inbox@realitycheck.radio and put "For Jerry" in your title. So don't forget to tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. or 10 p.m. or catch me again at every Saturday morning if you want to hear all the music. Copyright means we cannot play the tracks on any replays that you just hear from the website. Well, that was then, but I don't have to close right now. I've got a few more minutes. Just in case you're wondering who you're listening to, my name is Jerry Pives, and this is Real People on RCR. And in this special edition of Jerry's Top Picks, I'm actually going to close with a couple of poems. The first one by me, and the second one by the amazing Mark Atwood. Consider me the warm-up act. Many of you have written in and asked me to play my commemorative to Wellington. So this is a replay of my commemorative to the Wellington protest. And that is going to be followed by Mark Atwood. So enjoy, enjoy, enjoy as I replay this recording of my Ode to Wellington and Mark Atwood's I See You. Many of us have been thinking about Wellington 2 years ago, and to commemorate such an important event, I just wanted to put together something a bit special. I thought I'd write a little poem, a kind of an ode, and it was inspired by a great email from Alia Bland. And this particular ode is called "If You Think Small People Don't Make a Difference, Then You've Never Spent a Night with a Flea." And I'm going to read this poem to the amazing music of Ludovico Einaudi. So here it is. You drove up in the convoy from Bluff and Cape Reinga, from every town and city. You came and came and came. You stood along the roadside. You cheered and waved in the rain. You stood upon the bridges again and again and again. 10,000 was your number, like an army called to war. 100,000 cheered you, and more and more and more. We felt the people rising. We heard the voice of truth, determined, uncompromising. We roared, we roared, we roared. The farmers came and the people came. And the poets and the healers, the plumbers and the caterers, the posties and the cleaners came. They came from far horizons with hearts that burned with flame. No matter what the danger, you came and came and came. There was no plan. There was no scheme. Nobody cancelled. No one divided. Just the power of human being. In love and power. In love and power. Again and again and again you came. And protectors, they turned deceivers. Politicians hiding in the hive. Police became vile thugs, yet still you held the line. You were battered and you were beaten, pepper sprayed into your eyes, but still you kept on singing and you fought against their lies. with legacy media served their masters, tried to deceive us with their lies. But you, my brother and my sister, your truth could not be denied. In stepped the newborn media, heroes and heroines all. A new hacker for New Zealand, the lie feeds said it all. They tortured you with water. They tortured you with sound. But you sang and laughed and danced around, around, around. And still the people came from near and distant shores. You would not be thwarted. You came more and more and more. And in that place of such corruption, where thugs and bullies ruled, where politicians cowed and sneered, a village would emerge. A village that showed what human beings can do when love and truth are sure, where peace and hope come strong, and more and more and more. This was the place in history where Goliath met his David. We saw the mandates lifted, and we saw the governments fall. Never, ever, never, never believe that you are small, for the smallest amongst us has the strength of all. This strength you wield, this sword you hold the power of the whole human world. My brothers and my sisters, you came and heard the call. Drove up in the convoy from Bluff and Cape Reinga, from every town and city. You came and came and came. You stood along the roadside. You cheered and waved in the rain. You stood upon the bridges again, again, again. 10,000 was your number, like an army called to war. 100,000 cheered you, and more and more and more. My brothers and my sisters, you came and heard the call. You came and held the line. You did it for us all. And if you think small people don't make a difference, then you've never spent a night with a flea. So my brothers and my sisters of Wellington Freedom Village, I stand and applaud you one and all. Yes, my brothers and sisters of Wellington Freedom Village, I stand and applaud you one and all. And just to round off this commemorative, thoughtful moment in regards to Wellington, I want to sign out with a beautiful poem by the remarkable Mark Atwood. I see you. God bless everyone. And thank you for sharing another session with me, Jerry Pipes. Well, thank you to the much persecuted, but even more beloved Mark Atwood. You know, the line that really resonated with me today when I heard that poem of his once again, and I listened to it many times, the line that resonated was, You lived your truth to say. You lived your truth to say. I wonder if any of you listening have found that the last few years have been all about learning how to live and speak our truth. Well, that's what hit me particularly. That's what I love about poetry. Different lines jump out at you at different times, don't they? So don't forget to tune in with me, Jerry Pives, every Tuesday at 1 p.m. or for the night owls, 10 p.m. And also every Sunday at 4 p.m. Have your Sunday afternoon tea with muffins. Sit down with a nice hot cup of tea and listen in to the show. Remember, that is Sunday at 4 p.m., not 4 p.m. on a Saturday, as the old recording just said. So Sundays at 4 p.m. And just so you know, next week we've got lined up for you the return of the Psychobabble Trio, the panel of psychobabblers sitting by the fireplace having a wee afternoon chat. Well, next week we plan to talk about one of the most exciting breakthrough books that any of us have come across. It's called The Indoctrinated Brain by Dr. Michael Nels. And it's a corker, and it gives us so many tips and ideas about how to survive these difficult times. So don't miss out next week, Tuesday, 1 p.m. or 10 p.m. or the following Sunday at 4 p.m. Every Sunday at 4 p.m. Just tune in. And until then, keep leaning into love and living your truth to say. I hope you have a beautiful week. And for you, I wish that you will take God's blessings with you wherever you may be.
Thanks for tuning in to Real People in the Psychotherapist Chair with Jerry Pives, Tuesdays from 1 p.m.